McGuire Report. I'm Paul McGuire. On today's program, I want to talk about important things that are going to radically affect your life, your children's life, your future. When I say the very near future, I mean the very near future. I'm talking about 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, 20 years, 30 years. Because there is perhaps the biggest revolutionary plan to completely redesign every nation on planet Earth, including America. Now, this kind of massive transformation has never, ever happened before to the degree that we're talking about. So there's no way you can compare it mentally. You can learn from history, but you really can't find a time in history when this level of massive transformation happened. And it's all centered around what they call the UN Agenda 2030, or the New Green Deal, or Agenda 21, or climate change. Now, there are many other, let's call them drivers, to this transformation. But the target drivers are things like climate change, the first Agenda 21, Agenda 2030, which takes the worst of Agenda 21 and puts it on steroids. And after all, by the way, Agenda 2030 is just around the corner. You're talking about, what, 11 or 12 years? That's nothing. And then you have the Green New Deal, which is nothing more than putting Agenda 2030 into action. Now, most Americans have little or no idea about what is in these things. Unfortunately, the mainstream media, even the channel that claims to be conservative mainstream media, and that's very questionable, by the way. You know, things change quickly, and the particular channel that I'm talking about, I think, is the best channel that there is. And it does a lot of good things. Without them, there would be no Voice of Truth. But that channel has changed incrementally. If you really take a close look at the content, the ratio between conservative programming and liberal programming, I think you'll find that the percentage of liberal progressive programming has been on the steady increase ever since the election of 2016 and then when Trump got elected. I watch that channel more than any other channel. And maybe you're the same way. And you know what? I'm not watching it because it's a conservative channel. That's not the reason I'm watching it. I'm watching it because I get such a visceral negative reaction. To be blunt, I get sick to my stomach when I watch these other channels. It's not what they're saying that bothers me so much. It's the blatant, in-your-face, intellectual, journalistic dishonesty that just is unending on these channels. I mean, lying, not quoting sources, distortion, bias, they're off the Richter scale. I wish it wasn't that way. It didn't used to be that way. As many of you know who have been followers of my ministry, Paul McGuire Ministries in Paradise Mountain Church for many decades, as many of you have known me for many decades, and some of you have known me for, 40 years or more. You know me because you have known me in the ministry or as a person in the ministry or just as a person, because I was very much a part of a very well-known, at that time, it was the only mega church in Southern California. Maybe there were two mega churches, but this was one of them. And I'm speaking of Jack Hayford's Church on the Way, where I was a member and a member of the ministry team and a member of the faculty for decades. So many decades that I literally forgot. I was a close friend of Dr. Jack Hayford, one of my primary spiritual mentors. I worked together with him one-on-one on many ministry projects. I was part of his ministry team. I wrote for him, for example, the Spirit-Filled Life Bible for Students, which is a big, thick New King James Version Bible. That was one of the all-time best-selling Bibles published by Thomas Nelson Publishers. In fact, the version that I did the writing for, which was the Spirit-Filled Life Bible for Students, and then there was the Spirit-Filled Life Bible, they were both about equally as thick. But I enjoyed writing the Spirit-Filled Life Bible for Students because it gave me a creative freedom. And I wrote all of the notes from Genesis to Revelation in the categories of what were called word wealth, which would give you an explanation of the of a biblical word and its Greek root and its Hebrew root and its Latin root, so you could understand the words. And I did all the words from Genesis to Revelation. Then I did all the forgot what it was called, but you would break up into a paragraph or two a teaching on a Bible verse or a couple of Bible verses, and you would simplify it and make it exciting and dynamic for young people, but also for young adults and adults. And I really enjoyed this because of a number of reasons. I enjoyed it because what I did is, with a lot of the titles of these explanations, I would write like "Sympathy for the Devil." Now, don't get a heart attack. That was simply the name of a famous Rolling Stones song. So I tried to make the. Obviously, I wasn't advocating sympathy for the devil, but I had this all over the book. It was very culturally, for the time, very culturally relevant because I wanted to make the Word of God accessible to regular people, to non-religious people. And I didn't want it to be a dry theological book. So it sold a phenomenal amount of copies because it was contemporary and relevant. And I deliberately went out of my way to not make it boring and religious. And so it sold like crazy. My disappointment is they got a number of years after it had this record-breaking sales record, and it was being used by adults and teenagers and all kinds of people all around the world, you know, they had some committee of Christian scholars, academics, who didn't add any, in my opinion, didn't add any real spiritual value to what I had written. But they what they did is they took what I wrote and they neutered it. They stripped it of its cultural impact. So like when I was talking about Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden, my title for the Bible study in the middle of the page was called Maximum Sex, Love, and Marriage. Why? Because that will grab somebody's attention. And I had all kinds of stuff like that. So it was interesting. But they turned it into a boring, predictable, overly theological. Personally, I think they ruined it. I don't know what happened to that Bible version after they finished, in my opinion, they finished ruining it. I would guess the Bible sales crashed. You know why they crashed? Because the person or persons they hired, I mean, this is not like bragging about me. And there was another contributor too. There was, I think, two of us who did all the notes from Genesis to Revelation. It took me a year and a half to do this. And the point is it made the Bible exciting. It made the Bible inviting. It made the Bible relevant. It made the Bible powerful. And that's the wording that I used. And then it sold, like I said, phenomenally. But then they turned it over to a bunch of theologian types, you know, who bore, you know, I'm not knocking all theologians, but theologians have a very bad tendency of imitating their secular counterparts in academia and speaking in a very dry, overly complex language. It's one thing if you're using a high level of vocabulary because you need a high level of vocabulary to explain it. It's entirely something different when you use a high level of vocabulary because what you're really secretly trying to do is impress everybody about how knowledgeable you were. So I think that after they switched it, oh, and then they ruined the artwork. Oh, dear God. Then I think the sales of this particular Bible, and I could be wrong, and if I'm wrong, I'll admit it publicly, but the sales began to crash. Why? Because it wasn't inviting, it wasn't exciting, it wasn't dynamic. It was, ho-hum, here's another religious, overly religious, lifeless Bible study tool. And that very, you know, I'm kind of like venting here, so give me permission to vent. But see, that kind of thing has always driven me crazy in the Christian world. This, because I came from an atheistic world, I knew what it took to reach me as somebody who was an atheist, a New Ager, and somebody who hated Christianity and had no interest in reading the Bible. And that was back in the 60s. Now, today, the amount of people who would have my same psychological spiritual profile has gone through the roof. It wasn't, I was probably, you know, a minority back then. Now it's the new norm. I mean, people are into witchcraft and everything else. And, you know, young people are listening to the hip-hop artist and rapper Jay-Z and Beyonce, his wife, and they're openly singing about Satanism, and whether you like their stuff or not, it's very, very creative. And Lady Gaga's the same, and you could go down the list. They're into satanic things, occultic things, but they're very, very creative, and they know how to capture a person's imagination. Well, that's what I tried to do with this Bible. In fact, if you want to know a little secret, when you see all these, you know, you have the Word of God, and then there's a square on one page or a square on two pages, and it's like a two or three paragraph mini Bible study that helps you open up key words and key themes. But it's designed to be, at least when Jack Hayford was talking to me at his office, and by the way, let me tell you something about Jack Hayford's office. I've had the privilege of meeting with a lot of Christian leaders, the biggest Christian leaders in the world, especially in the United States. The vast majority of them I've met. But the thing about Jack Hayford is he had an office at the King's College and Seminary. I was a professor of eschatology or Bible prophecy at Jack Hayford's King's College and Seminary. He had an office there that was a large office, etc., because he had to meet faculty, staff, visitors. But when I would go to his house, he had his office in his house, which was a vacant upstairs bedroom. And I remember the first time he took me up there to discuss the plans for writing this Spirit-filled Life Bible for students. And I remember going up a modest flight of stairs. But what was interesting about the modest flight of stairs to his office is it had all these large pictures as you walked up step by step. I kind of told you the history of Jack Hayford. He wasn't prominently displaying this because he invited very, very few people to his private office. But you saw a picture of him and Billy Graham speaking in a stadium together, and you saw him and various very important Christian leaders and world leaders. But it wasn't just like bragging pictures. These were like news stories, and it just gave you a kind of a bio of him. So I get into his office, and I'm not shocked, but I'm like surprised, because his office physically is not all that big, and it's very humble. Now, Jack Hayford, if he wanted to be, could be a very wealthy man, because Jack Hayford is not only a great preacher, a prolific author, but he was a musical composer and wrote the lyrics for so many of the most popularly used worship songs sung in all kinds of Christian denominations in the world. Songs like Majesty, and, you know, I could rattle off 20 right now, and you know the names because you've sung them. Well, the royalties he got from these songs, these worship songs he composed, like, I don't want to discuss his wealth publicly, and I don't know what his exact wealth was, but I would imagine that he was wealthy and affluent to a considerable degree because of that. Now, you would never know it, though, by Jack Hayford's lifestyle, by his home, by his cars, by his office at home. He had a nice home in a middle-class community, but it wasn't, you know, some outrageous palatial community. And when I walked up the stairs to his office, his house was, 35 years old or whatever. Very nice house, very well-kept house in a very nice neighborhood. But I was struck by his office, the starkness of it. It was a working office. He had books and Bibles, and he had a tape recorder. And it wasn't, you know, I laughed my head off. Jack Hayford's tape recorder was an old-fashioned cassette recorder. And this was just a couple of years. No, this was, I don't know, back enough far when 99.9% of the people you know had either computers or thumb drives, or nobody was using cassettes. The cassettes were obsolete completely. They're all using electronic data storage with very fancy sound mixers, very fancy microphones. And he had a huge staff of multimedia people. They could have set him up the most deluxe recording studio within his office if he wanted. He didn't want it. He composed, he had a piano in there. He composed his songs on a cassette recorder. You know why? Because Jack Hayford was not in love with money. Money was not his God. I can't tell you how many offices that I've been into, and you would think that you were in the of Christian leaders. And I'm not judging Christian leaders who have fancy offices, because Jack also had an office at the King's College. I wouldn't say it was fancy, but it was the office of the chief executive of a mega church and a major university and seminary. And that's where he met the public. But his office where he worked was humble. It was like the office of a pastor that might have, you know, 50 members in it. He wasn't putting on any airs. So we sat down and talked. He was always real. He never put on airs. And he basically explained to me, he's very kind, explained to me what I needed to do and why he chose me, because I was honored to be chosen to do this. And one of the reasons he chose me is because he knew that I knew the Word of God very well. He knew that I studied Francis Schaeffer, et cetera, and that I had sound doctrine and I wasn't going to go off on a tangent. But he also knew that Paul McGuire was very creative, and it would not be boring, and it would reach out to youth. So I was very honored to do that, and I got paid to spend a year and a half studying the entire Old Testament and New Testament and breaking it down into word wealths and into these statements that give many Bible studies. And in those statements that give many Bible studies within this Spiritful Life Bible for Students, if you see it on the on Amazon or whatever, grab yourself a copy if it's the big, thick, old edition. My name is on it in the credits, but I don't know if it's on it in the Amazon ad. And my name is on it in terms of inconspicuous credits compared to Jack Hayford, who's the general editor. Because this is like a 10 or 15 year old volume, and it's really a great Bible study. And again, the new ones they published with the bad artwork and the typical religious, overly religious, hollow, you know, pharisaical tone of preaching isn't in there. And why am I saying this? Well, I'm saying this because so many people grew in discipleship. I can't tell you how many conferences I've spoken at and Christians I've met all across the nation who carried with them the Spirit-filled Life Bible for Students that I had the privilege of being one of the editors on, which was written in that, you know, culturally connected style. And they never went around and bought the other one because it was religious. And you will find this, well, maybe you won't, but I find it amusing. Many of the titles I use were secretly titles from rock and roll songs and movies. And I got a big kick out of it because it interested the people who were trying to learn about the Bible. But all the theologian types that were in the executive committee didn't get what I did. And it wasn't subversive. I was trying to be a fisherman and use bait that worked. But all these theological types were so out of touch with the culture that they claimed they wanted to reach, they didn't realize that my headlines were all from movies and sci-fi movies and rock and roll songs and pop songs. And, you know, so I did it on purpose to make to reach people in a non-Christian culture. But they live in their own land of their own reality. And you can't reach people for Jesus Christ when you are living in a cocoon, when you're walled off from reality. So this is all a side note, but I thought I would share it. And my greatest privilege and my greatest thankfulness to the Lord is that he gave me that to do. And that book reached a lot of people for Jesus Christ and made a lot of disciples for Jesus Christ. And so I wrote a bunch of books with Jack Hayford on Bible studies and stuff, probably like four or five, plus the Bible. And I was getting paid to study and grow in the Word of God, so I'm very thankful for that. You're listening to the Paul McGuire Report. I'm Paul McGuire. We will be back in just a second. This is the Paul McGuire Report. I'm Paul McGuire. One of the most critical things that's happening in our world today is the New Green Deal or agenda, the UN Agenda 2030, which comes from Agenda 21. Now, the most important thing for you to realize, if you don't already realize it, and I guarantee you, a lot of your friends don't realize it, Agenda 2030, which is this pretense, it's a Trojan horse that the United Nations, by the year 2030, which is what, 11, 12 years from now, that's very, very close, they're going to totally transform the world because they see the greatest threat as climate change. And so the great threat of climate change is going to give them the cover. It's going to give them the excuse to do things that you couldn't normally do in everyday life. In other words, if you have a Uber crisis, a mega crisis, then you're justified in doing all kinds of radical things because, of course, you're protecting everybody from a mega crisis. So the people who really control planet Earth from the beginning have always used an occult slogan that you're familiar with, and that is order out of chaos. And you can't ever forget the primary occult operating principle called order out of chaos, which is also manufactured crisis. In other words, chaos just doesn't happen. Sometimes it does, but usually chaos is manufactured. Usually chaos is man-made. So in our time, we've tweaked the words a little bit, and we call it a manufactured crisis. That's why Obama, who was a community organizer, which means he was a communist organizer in Chicago, in the book by Saul Alinsky, Rules for Radicals, he's continually talking about the need to create manufactured crisis, because you see, the crisis provides the excuse and it provides the rationale and it provides the brainwashing, propaganda, mind control cover to get people to do things that they normally wouldn't do if they were thinking in their rational minds. Now, in my book, excuse me for coughing so much. It's been baking hot in Southern California, where our studio is. I mean, hot is an understatement, a total understatement. Manufactured crisis, order out of chaos. Now, these are occultic principles. These aren't just sociological principles. They're not just communist, socialist, Marxist principles. When you go back far enough, order out of chaos is the language you will see on ancient Freemasonry literature, or you go back before ancient Freemasonry to other secret occult societies. They constantly use the expression order out of chaos. And you have to really know what this means. So let's try to give you, many of you already know what it means, but for those of you that are new, and for those of you that need to explain it to your friends, which you should be on a crusade to do, by the way, order out of chaos is the mechanism by which you create revolution. Because, you see, when we look at history, when we look at science, when we look at geopolitics, you can't look at history, science, technology, geopolitics, economics, and things of that nature. If you're looking at those things through the sunglasses of what you learned in secular public education, starting when you were indoctrinated in kindergarten and went all the way up, however far you went in your college degree, whether you got a two-year community college degree, whether you stopped at high school, whether you got a four-year college degree, or you went on and got a master's degree or a doctorate, the operating principle is the same. You were trained. You did not receive an education. You know, I realize that a lot of what I say sounds very radical to some people. I'm fully cognizant of that. A lot of what I say sounds very radical to certain people, and it's very threatening to them. And I can understand why, and I do have compassion about it. But see, I can't allow my compassion. I maintain my compassion for these people. That's my motive, loving my neighbor as myself. Being an extension of God's love to others is my primary mission. But you see, I don't see any conflict with confronting people, because I believe firmly, I never hear this said in Christian circles, true love confronts. If we love our neighbor as ourselves, true love confronts. Now, I don't hear a whole lot of that in the Christian culture, but I can ask any parent, any good parent or any Christian parent, and any good parent or any Christian parent is going to tell me that they totally know what I mean by true love confronts. Because a good parent loves their child, et cetera, et cetera. But a good parent also knows when it's time to get in your kid's face. And you know what I mean by that. A good parent, a truly loving parent, knows how to get in their kid's face. Because ultimately, what your kid is starving for, and I don't care how old your kid is, what your kid is starving for, you can't believe all the propaganda of the liberal TV shows, etc. Your kid is starving for you to love them enough to actually say
no, your kid is starving for your love so that you would demonstrate your love by erecting boundaries and categories where you teach your child, this is right, this is wrong. Don't go out of this boundary. You see, this is a complete contradiction to the liberal mindset that has infected our culture, which falsely teaches children have their love and self-esteem built by how permissive the parent is. Now, I used to believe that, by the way, because I was raised in an atheist liberal household in New York City. So the more liberal my parents were in many areas, although when I was young, as I've told you many times, my mother was from Missouri. So even though she was like a super liberal, and by the way, it took me years to figure out how she became a super liberal. And finally, it dawned upon me about 4 years ago. Yes, her friends were liberal in New York City, but she began getting higher education. She already had her four-year college degree, but she began enrolling in higher education to get higher degrees. And it didn't mean anything to me at the time because I didn't know what this was, but she was attending a brand new college and university in Manhattan called the New School for Social Research. Now, back then, I didn't know what that was. I only found out years later, and then, boom, I had an epiphany. I understood why my mother went through a radical political social transformation that just seemed odd. The New School for Social Research, or as it was commonly known, the New School, was an offshoot of the Marxist Frankfurt schools, which were about teaching socialism and deconstructing Judeo-Christian culture. You see, so the university she went to for her advanced educational degree was part of a whole series of new colleges and universities springing up across the United States that were all birthed out of the Marxist Frankfurt School. And they were secretly not just educating, what they were doing is they were secretly indoctrinating students and adult students in Frankfurt School Marxism, which targeted the deconstruction of a biblical Judeo-Christian worldview, America, conservatism, a biblical worldview. The Frankfurt Marxist schools, taught by Marxist professors, They created this new wave of schools, which were actually Frankfurt Marxist schools, but they went by various different names. Now, many of these professors were deeply entrenched and tenured in Yale, Harvard, etc. But then they developed these fully accredited schools for higher education, like the New School of Social Research in Manhattan, which was right out of the Frankfurt School. The Frankfurt School Marxist professors would teach there. So my mother was being, she thought she was being educated, but she was really being indoctrinated because I read some of the books that she had to read. And even back then, which is what, third, fourth grade, fifth grade, I understood that she was being indoctrinated in contemporary Marxist theory, because I was reading. I mean, like I said, I was a nerd, a geek. I read like, you know, 30, 40 books a month. People think I'm exaggerating, but that's the truth. But I would read books by the Frankfurt School Marxist professors themselves because they were celebrities. They were best-selling authors, people like Marcuse, Eric Fromm, Theodore Adorno, and on and on and on. She was reading those books. And what those books were doing is they were indoctrinating their students in secular humanism. They were indoctrinating their students in Frankfurt School Marxism. Now, Frankfurt School Marxism was a softer socialist Marxist revolution where they used techniques like political correctness and things like that to create, let's say, a soft revolution. So I couldn't figure out how my mother went through this transition for decades because she was really a super liberal, and she got more liberal and more liberal and more liberal and more liberal as time went on. So did her friends, but she seemed to be on the fast track. I love my mother dearly. If she happens to be listening to the show, Mom, I love you. I will always love you. And politics will never get in the way. She's also a card-carrying member of the ACLU. And she's steadfast in her socialist beliefs. But that's because, now she would not admit this, because she was indoctrinated through the Frankfurt School Marxist curriculum and their more disguised colleges and universities, like the New School for Social Research in Manhattan. You see, this is how they indoctrinate multiple generations into rejecting Christianity and accepting socialism, except they leave out one very inconvenient truth. And this is a truth that I understood going way, way back to, like, I don't know, junior high school, because junior high school and then high school, I had my hair down to my waist. I was involved in radical politics. But I realized, okay, because some of, like I said on the program before, I had friends who were like, if you ever saw the episodic TV show Mad Men, I had friends whose fathers were Madison Avenue advertising executives. And that movie Mad Men, which I think took place in the 50s and 60s in the Manhattan advertising industry, very, very accurately reflected the advertising agency industry at that time. But you would think that those guys would be super capitalists. And I told you the story of this, my friend's father, who was like Mr. Madison Avenue. You know, I thought this guy was like the ultimate winner. He intimidated me. But going to the subway, he saw that I had hair down to my waist. He knew I was involved in anti-war demonstrations. I was demonstrating with Abby Hoffman. So I guess he thought he had an open door, and he tried to get me to take the next step into becoming a socialist Marxist revolutionary. And like I told you before, I just couldn't do it. I was really polite to the guy. I said, but I always said to the Marxists, they thought I was a Marxist because I had long hair and I wanted to see a revolution. But the revolution I wanted to see was based on higher consciousness. Okay? It was not based on what to me was, I mean, somebody would have had to have poked your eyes out with an umbrella not to be able to see that nowhere on planet Earth ever, not now, not in the future, has there ever been a communist, socialist, Marxist government which has ever even remotely succeeded. And that's what I told the guy. I said, look, you know, what you're saying sounds very romantic. It's very appealing, you know, democratic socialism. And we're going to, you know, workers of the world unite. We'll create paradise on earth. Why not? Why not create paradise on earth? But you're doing it based on socialism. And socialism has never been anything else but a stepping stone into communism and Marxism. And what I said to him was, I have never seen a video, black and white news footage, read a book, saw a photograph. I have never read an account, and I'm fairly well familiar with all these nations that had communist revolutions, I told him, because he knew I was a reader and I was a smart kid. And I said, look, you know, no offense, but I don't see one single example of socialism, communism, or Marxism ever working, ever creating a workers' paradise. And in fact, in every single communist, socialist, Marxist nation, it becomes a hellhole. People lose all their freedoms. It becomes a police state. Millions of people are killed, shot, murdered, starved to death, sent to re-education camps. And they live in a totalitarian state where they're dirt poor, earning dirt poor slave labor wages. So why would I want to be a communist? And I don't know. There's a disconnect in these people's brains. There's a short circuit somewhere, but I'm not an electrician, so I can't tell you where the circuit breaker flipped in their neurological system because they're unable to perceive the obvious. Okay, so let's get into the Green New Deal. The Green New Deal, let's expose it. Let's not beat around the bush. Let's expose the Green New Deal for what it is. Now, I'm going to be cynical here. So if you could give me the space to be cynical, I have to be cynical on a regular basis. You say, why? It's not a fruit of the Spirit. I didn't say it was a fruit of the Spirit. I just said I had to be cynical on a regular basis. Do you know why? I use it with humor, and if I wasn't cynical, and if I didn't use satire, I would go absolutely stark raving mad. You know why? Because I'm endlessly perplexed at the, and I don't mean to be unkind, but I'm endlessly perplexed at the stupidity and lack of willingness to think among people in America, around the world, and especially among Christians who should know better. So you have all these politicians in the Democratic Party. And what I'm about to say, by the way, don't go riding your horse in one direction or another. What I'm saying, and hear me correctly, this is not by any way, shape, or means a political statement, and I'm going to explain why. Because what I'm talking about is not targeted towards the Democrats or targeted towards the Republicans. What I'm about to explain is something that both the Democrats and a large percentage of the Republicans both stand for. So this is not like, oh, the conservatives are great and the liberals are horrible. No. You have the same syndrome at work among the radical Democrats as you do among the globalist Republicans, because the agenda of the globalist Republicans is going to take you into the exact same nightmare that the agenda of the radical Democrats will take you. Globalism, Marxism, socialism, and communism all end up in the same place. And it's not paradise. Together they will, to use that old song title, together they will, they paved up paradise and put up a parking lot. Was it Joni Mitchell or something who sang that song? Okay, so the Green New Deal, first of all, number one, the Green New Deal stems and flows from socialism and communism. Therefore, analyzing it through the failed track record of communism, Marxism, and socialism, we know it's going to be the Titanic. It can't work because communist economic theory and social theory doesn't work. It can't work. It's a failed system. So is socialism, so is Marxism, so is communism. Their track record proves it. Anybody who gets up there, and I don't care who your favorite politician is, you have got to have been dropped on your head seriously in the birthing room to believe the lie of communist socialism and Marxism. It doesn't work. It's never worked. Okay, so from that standpoint, we know that the Green New Deal cannot work because it's a socialist communist program. Number two is, we know it cannot work because it's based on the same theories as the United Nations Agenda 2030 and what they used to call Agenda 21. And there's a major, major fallacy. There's a major defect in the platform of Agenda 21 or Agenda 2030 and that which the Green New Deal is based upon. Now, you may not want to hear it, but sooner or later, you will hear it. You'll hear it inside a re-education camp, or you'll hear it when you see the economy of the nation you live in literally collapse into something worse than the Great Depression of 1929 in the United States, or literally collapse into something worse than the German Great Depression that occurred right before the rise of Adolf Hitler, where the German people would have to go to the bank and stores literally with wheelbarrows filled with paper printed dollars. Now, the German dollar was called the Mark. So if the Germans wanted a loaf of bread, he talks about this in the book of Revelation. If the Germans wanted a loaf of bread, they'd have to take a wheelbarrow filled with German marks or German dollars to buy a loaf of bread because inflation had destroyed their economic system. Okay. So, what is the Green New Deal? We don't have to go, you know, into a micro analysis of it, but you need to know some things about the Green New Deal. First of all, let's go back to Agenda 21, because Agenda 21 was the pilot program from the United Nations that created the first Agenda 2030 and kind of did a trial run on the Green New Deal. And it failed. It was a nightmare, okay? And anybody who tells you it wasn't a nightmare has had a brain transplant. The problem is, in the brain transplant, they didn't get a human brain. They got the brain of an anteater. Can you imagine going in some transhumanist future and the laboratory and the... Play this mental game with me, will you? Okay, we all know Canada as a socialist nation. We all know the socialist universal health care in Canada stinks to high heaven. Anybody who doesn't know that is on the United States side of the border. All the people in Canada know that their socialist universal health care stinks. That's why when anybody gets seriously sick, they will bankrupt themselves to come across the border into the United States and pay out of their own pocket and hire American doctors, American hospitals to treat them of whatever their medical problem is. And then they'll go back to Canada cured. You know why? Because the Canadian universal healthcare system is so bad that many people who have strep throats have to wait like a month or two just to get in to see a doctor, and then they die. People are dying constantly in Canada because the wait time is ridiculous. And if you have something serious like cancer or something else, the percentage of people that die before they ever see the doctor is astronomical. So Canadians are regularly using their own money. So it isn't free healthcare, is it? They're using their own money to come across to the United States and take advantage of our non-governmental run universal healthcare. Because universal healthcare run by socialist communist nations never works. Just ask the Canadians. You can have all the delusions you want. Oh, and guess what? In Canada, you get to keep your delusions because you probably won't get treated for 2 or 3 years. You won't get the proper meds or psychiatric treatments. So the only way you're going to deal with your delusions is learn to fall in love with them. So let's get into this. So the new Green Deal comes out of Agenda 21. Okay? And Agenda 21 is a radical restructuring of planet Earth. And who was the chairman of Agenda 21? A guy named Maurice Strong, who was one of the top men in the United Nations. But Maurice Strong happens to be one of the wealthiest men in the world. And Maurice Strong is a hardcore occultist and deeply involved in New Age spirituality. Remember that. Okay. So in Agenda 21 and Agenda 2030 and in the Green New Deal, the idea is to destroy all fossil fuels, to destroy gasoline production, oil production, obviously, coal production, anything that could potentially pollute the air or the planet is outlawed. Okay, it's illegal. Now, listen carefully. Everything that causes our economy to run, prosper, and thrive is made illegal. Okay? And they're okay with that. So when you stop oil production, gasoline production, and all the other fuel productions, you don't have to be a rocket scientist to figure out that you are going to wipe out at a minimum 40% of your food production. If you shut down your energy production, you are also shutting down your food production. And you don't have to be a genius to figure out that if you're shutting down 40% of your food production, you're going to have, in a very short period of time, mass starvation in America. So let's say people get elected or whatever, and they demand that the Green New Deal is enforced. Now, this begins to very quickly shut down every kind of energy production and development you can imagine, including the transportation of food through trucks which use gasoline, etc. So now you have a nightmare. And I'm giving you conservative estimates. So now here's your nightmare. Because if you shut down all your energy production is always mathematically tied to food production, you have massive artificial food shortages. Okay, let's say we have a 60% reduction in food supplies. That means it's down to 40%. That means mass starvation. Now, what does that mean? The CIA created a computer algorithm a number of years ago in conjunction with MIT, Massachusetts Institute of Technology, where they said that the primary, and when the CIA analyzes global data regarding anarchy, riots, civil war, revolutions, social unrest, violence, and bloodshed, they said the number one variable that they can track via computer, where they can predict with mathematical certainty that bloody revolutions, mass killing, mass murders, anarchy, violence, and chaos will hit a nation, the number one trigger, according to the CIA and MIT, is when food availability crashes, either through droughts or some, you know, war or things like a Green New Deal. So when you cut food production, you are pressing the buttons for anarchy, bloodshed, mass starvation, civil war, revolution. You think these politicians think about it? No, they don't think about it because they don't even know it exists. So let's and by the way, in my book, which you need to get and you need to buy and distribute it to other people, in my book, The Greatest Battle for the Hearts and Minds of Mankind in the History of the World, I go through all of this. And if you order the book now, you will get a financial discount on the book. And you can order it by going to paulmcguire.us. If you order it now, you get your copy mailed to you before it's available to the general public. You get a financial discount on the book, and you get an autographed copy of the book. I go into this Green New Deal, Agenda 2030, Agenda 21, and the kinds of things I'm mentioning, and I'm going to be mentioning at this second. Okay, first thing you have to know is that this Green New Deal comes right out of Agenda 2030. It does not work. It's a failed socialist communist program. And the real reason behind it, I'm not going to name the politician, but you probably saw her in the news. And the man that was running her campaign, I guess this female politician and the man that was running her campaign, got in a fight. So he decided to blow the whistle and tell the truth about this big-time politician who was promoting the Green New Deal like crazy. And he accused her of this. He said, she knows that the Green New Deal has nothing to do with what they're telling you it has to do with. He said, the entire purpose of the Green New Deal is to use it as a pretense or a Trojan horse to take over the entire U.S. economy. Now, you need to write that down and underline it. Why would anybody want to do that? Because that's Communist Revolution 101. That's Marxist Revolution 101. That's Socialist Revolution 101. They have to take over the entire economy. So they do it through lies and deceit. So the Green New Deal, they know it's going to create chaos. They want chaos because chaos will bring in a socialist revolution. The purpose of the Green New Deal, according to my research, but really more importantly, according to this female politician's campaign manager, he said that these key political leaders know the Green New Deal is going to collapse our economy and our food supply. But it's their way where they'll be able to take over our entire economy. And in order for there to be a socialist, communist, or Marxist revolution, if you read the Karl Marx's Communist Manifesto, is the state has to take over all the means of production. It's one of the major tenets of communism that the state takes over all the means of production. So when the Green New Deal people take over all the manufacturing of food, all the energy supplies, what they've done is they've activated the Communist Manifesto, which says that they take over the means of production. The more that the means of production is controlled by the government, the more powerful a socialist, Marxist, communist state you have. So he let the cat out of the bag. What will this do, this Green New Deal? You think you have a regulated society now? You will have a super, super regulated society. And this is what the Green New Deal promises to do. And this is a suicide march. You would have to be a member of the Jim Jones cult, who not only had a couple of glasses of the Kool-Aid mixed with poison, you would have had to drink a gallon of the Kool-Aid poison to believe this nonsense. The Green New Deal, their proposal is to reduce the world and the U.S., their production, our production of coal, oil, and natural gas, they want to reduce it by 85%. They want to reduce the production of coal, oil, and natural gas by 85%. You notice Communist China is the biggest polluter and user of coal, oil, and natural gas, and nobody's touching them. They're going to take a wrecking ball to the U.S. economy. If you reduce, this is more than suicide. This is insanity. You reduce the U.S. coal, oil, and natural gas production by 85%. Let's say you have it phased out over the next 10 years, which is what they want to do. I want you to listen to me very, very carefully. And then I want you to go to paulmaguire.us and order a copy of the book, The Greatest Battle for the Hearts and Minds of Mankind in the History of the World, now while you can get a financial discount. It'll be rushed to you before it's out to the general public. You need to get the book because I explain all this. Now listen to me carefully because this is from the book. If they succeed with their Green New Deal and they reduce U.S. coal, oil, and natural gas production by 85%, phased out over the next few years or the next 10 years, first of all, we don't have anything at the present moment that will generate the power we need to produce food and run our cities. So this is a suicide game. Oh yeah, we got a lot of big talkers about windmills and solar panels and all this stuff. They're not operational. And if they are operational, that they're at a minimal level. They couldn't produce enough power to even generate enough power for a segment of our society. So if they kill 85% of the U.S. coal, oil, and natural gas production, like in the next 10 years, we don't have any other way of getting energy. But we can have all the romantic George Soros legalized marijuana pipe dreams we want to have, but we don't have a technology and industry to replace that power. You know, we need to think critically. Again, I'm not being facetious. God gave us the mind of Christ. My question rhetorically is always the same. If God gave us the mind of Christ, which he did, the following question should be, is the mind of Christ stupid? Why do I ask that question? Because I meet a massive percentage of what I would call stupid Christians. I'm not trying to be unkind. It's factual. They're supporting the Green New Deal. They're supporting an 85% cut on U.S. coal, oil, and natural gas production. Okay, but they obviously don't have the mind of Christ operational, because the mind of Christ is not stupid. And this is stupid. This is so stupid that it's suicidal. But you got Christians who act like they're in a daze. This is exactly what will happen if we reduced coal, oil, and natural gas production over the next 10 years. We will reduce it by 85%. We don't have anything to replace it with right now. You can have your romantic pipe. Why do you think George Soros is so interested and has spent so much money legalizing marijuana in states across the United States, like California and Colorado and other states? Is it because George Soros is a nice guy and he wants to give you freedom to get high? Is that why George Soros is doing that? Once again, the mind of Christ is not stupid. No, he wants you high. You say, well, why would George Soros want you high? If you can't figure out that answer to that question, then you probably already are high. George Soros wants as many people high in the United States of America and the European Union as he possibly can, for this reason. People who are high on marijuana and other drugs cannot think intelligently, clearly, and rationally, and they don't have the ability to critically think. That's why George Soros wants people high. He's not a good guy. That's not why he's legalizing marijuana. He wants everybody stoned. Why? Because stone people can't see the obvious. Stone people can't lead. Stone people don't know how to analyze the facts. He wants you high because he's all about initiating a hardcore socialist revolution in the United States of America, in which the Green New Deal will be passed. And he knows the only way he can accomplish that goal. He's not going to win at that goal if America is sober-minded, like the Bible said, be sober-minded, or your adversary, the devil, goes about like a roaring lion seeking whom he may devour. George Soros doesn't want you sober-minded. He wants you stoned so you can't see the obvious. And here's the obvious. If we have an 85% reduction in the production of energy, half of the population in the United States and planet Earth will die off in a relatively short period of time. Did you hear what I said? With no food on a mass level, if we have a 60% reduction of food production because we don't have coal, oil, and natural gas, that means, conservatively, we can only feed 40% of the American and 40% of the global population. That means 60% of the population in the United States and the world dies off. At least half the population dies off. Now, my question to Christians who are upset when your confrontational about this is, what are you about? You say you love your neighbor as yourself. You babble on endlessly about how God is love and it's okay with you. And you think, on what basis do you think it's okay to be stupid and do nothing and allow half the population to die off in the U.S. and planet Earth? On what basis, on what biblical basis are you making that decision? Well, don't kid yourself. You're not making it on a biblical basis. Remember, this is all in my book, by the way, in much more detail. For example, I also talk about the Georgia Guidestones. That was put together by the globalist elite. And they wrote on those guidestones that they wanted to reduce the world's population from 7 billion to 500 million people as fast as possible. Well, this is their way they can do it. The Green New Deal. It's a Trojan horse. The Green New Deal is based right from Agenda 2030 and Agenda 21. It's not a new deal. It's a suicide march. Now, I'm not going to name the names of the politicians. I am somebody who's trained himself to be in a very high state of awareness, which means I have deliberately devoted time to training my senses, and I've deliberately devoted time to optimizing my intelligence and senses. That means my physical, visual senses, hearing, smelling, tasting, etc., plus my analytical and critical reasoning ability. And you can do the same thing. There's nothing special about me. I teach you how to do this in my books. If you follow the principles that I teach in the books and on the shows for free, you can do the same thing. I have it in Conquering the Matrix, and I talk about it. Just go through the Paul McGuire Radio Report archives. It's free. I record 2 hours, roughly, approximately 2 hours a day, of programming free, for you to hear free, to be edified, to be built up. I can look into the eyes of a disturbingly large percentage of politicians in America, and I'm not the only one. Many of you have the same ability. And I see what I call heroin eyes, meth eyes, cocaine eyes, or more dangerously, a mixture of a heroin amphetamine type of eyes. I could recognize them a million miles away, not only because I've trained myself to, but because I grew up in Jackson Heights, Queens, during the hippie days. And I remember on the way to the subway, I would meet a lot of people who turned to heroin. Sadly to say, their lives were ruined. But they had those heroin eyes. And once you learn to recognize heroin eyes, I'm not talking about Betty Davis eyes. You know who Betty Davis is, right? This actress who had these sensual eyes. There was some rock song. I forgot who sang it. She's got Betty Davis eyes. Yeah, you know what I'm talking about. I'm not talking about Betty Davis eyes. I'm talking about heroin eyes. And I'm looking into the eyes of some of these very high energy politicians that are promoting the Green New Deal, and every ounce of my neurological being perceives the fact that based on the unusual energy level, there's people that have high energy and there's people that are flying on something. The dilated pupils, the very enlarged pupils, and a distinct glassiness to the eyes, which bulge out slightly. Those are heroin eyes. Maybe cut with some kind of upper. I can look at people and tell you a great deal about what cocktail of drugs, legal and illegal, they're on. I can see MK Ultra eyes. I keep my mouth shut, but I see it all the time. So could that be the reason why this high-energy politician is driving us off the cliff with this suicide Green New Deal? Because she's, to be blunt, whacked out on heroin and some kind of amphetamine. You think I'm kidding? You think I'm being facetious? No, I'm not kidding. I'm not being facetious. You think I've overstepped my bounds? I'll take the risk. But I'll bet you anything that that person can't pass a drug test. Look at the eyes. The eyes are the window to the soul. Okay? Enough said on that. Those of you that get it, and some of you will catch up. Okay, so this one particular politician, her campaign manager, said that the only reason she was promoting the Green New Deal is because all the socialists in a particular political party want to take over the means of production. They want to use it as a pretense to take over our industry, our manufacturing, or our business. That is, taking over the means of production is an exact quote from Karl Marx and the Communist Manifesto. Then there's all these scientists who come out publicly and said that climate change is a fake, and that these scientists believe that the real agenda behind climate change is to centralize political power and create a powerful global, and may I add, socialist, communist, Marxist, centralized government in the form of the United States. That's what's coming. And what do you think's coming with that? When you talk to your Christian friends, do they have any clue about what's coming? No. Do their pastors have any clue about what's coming? No. Do the Bible teachers have a clue about what's coming? No. Do you think that's acceptable to God? Do you think that level of lack of education, lack of awareness, lack of being an effective watchman, do you think that's acceptable with God? No. No, it's not. It's not. You could justify it all you want, but it's not. So, what comes after that? These people are very rich. This is the globalist elite. These are the international banking. I go into detail about who these people are and their genetics and their background in my brand new book, The Greatest Battle for the Hearts and Minds of Mankind in the History of the World. Look, this book is being offered at a significant financial discount to you right now. If you order it now, you get the financial discount. As soon as it's printed, you will get your copy rushed to you before the general public, and you get an autographed copy. It's the most important book I've written in my life. Okay? And I've written some very important books that you ought to read also, like Trumpocalypse that I wrote with Troy Anderson, The Babylon Code that I wrote with Troy Anderson, and other books. This book is important because time is running out. One of the things that's part of their Agenda 21, Agenda 2030, Green New Deal, Trojan horse, sneaky, dirty, deceptive, hardcore socialist, hardcore Marxist, hardcore communist game plan is the things that you'll never... Isn't it interesting that Fox News, fair and balanced, yeah, compared to the rest, they're fair and balanced, but they never tell you about this. So how fair and balanced are they? And the other networks are completely under the payroll of Big Brother, and they're the thought police, so they're never going to tell you about it. Okay. They have a plan that they call America's Eco-Cities. Now that sounds good, doesn't it? That America is going to have all these ecologically friendly cities? One author said that the real name of these American eco-cities should be called sustainable prisons in the future. What will these eco-cities be like? Let me give you a hint. And look, they have slammed their foot to the accelerator in the car they're driving, and they are burning rubber. They're moving towards their goal at lightning speed. And some of you, well, many of you get it because you're a regular listener of the Paul McGuire Report, but you've got friends that are clueless. If you don't wake them up, nobody's going to wake them up. So 2030 is just 10 years after the next election, which is 2020. They plan to have moved a total of the, I guess, what, are we still at 7 billion people on planet Earth? I want you to realize what a radical seismic shift this is. They plan by 2030 that they will move a total of 4 billion people into what they call eco-cities with controlled environments that are sustainable cities and regulate up to the droplet how much water, energy, food, and production is allowed in these eco-cities. Now, right now, we have about 7 billion people on planet Earth. A lot of them are rural areas. They're spread out all over the place. They're spread out in suburbs. But you see, the game plan of the globalist elite, who are the secret masters of the world, by the way, is to squeeze as many people as they can. They're planning by 2030 to put 4 billion people in these eco-cities. You better wake up and smell the coffee. You dream of an American dream? Somebody's got an AK-47 aimed at that American dream, and it's not some gun nut. It's the UN, because they want to shut down the suburbs. So they don't want you to have your American dream. They want you to live in a teeny weeny apartment. I've seen the promotional propaganda ads promoting these eco cities, and notice how many TV shows are promoting how cool it is to have an itsy-bitsy, teeny-weeny, not yellow dot bikini, but an itsy-bitsy, teeny-weeny apartment that's 500 square feet. But how cool it is. You see, you sell people, you can brainwash people to believe anything. People are so easily brainwashed under scientific mind control, another topic I deal with in my book, is that you can convince them that what's awful for them is their heart's desire. So you convince people through mass brainwashing that living in a nice house with land and grass around it, or living in a mansion, or living in a beautiful rural area or whatever, you can brainwash them into thinking that's absolutely horrible. And then you can make them feel guilty that by living in such nice housing and land that they're responsible for destroying the planet. What kind of... Somebody has had to drop you on your head in the birthing room. Do you think Al Gore, when he travels with speeches in his giant jet burning up who knows how much fossil fuel, all the movie stars, all the elite, all the high rollers, all the politicians fly in massive private jets burning up all kinds of fossil fuel. They all live in mansions and giant homes and keep the lights on and have heating swimming pools. And have palatial cars or fleets of cars. Do you think they give a hoot about burning energy? No. They let Tom Cruise, for crying out loud. Every time they turn around, he's got a different mansion in a different state. He's not thinking about living in a 500-foot apartment. I have never measured my garage, okay? I don't know if it's 500 feet, less than 500 feet, or more than 500 feet. But for many of you listening, you're going to be living in a 500-foot garage called your eco-friendly apartment in the eco-friendly city. And what they forgot to tell you about is that eco-city is going to be filled with violent crime, migrants that are angry. You're going to have racial hatred because it's already boiling over in the city. People are going to get raped, killed, shot, and murdered in these eco-cities. How do I know? Because I grew up in New York City in Jackson Heights, Queens. It wasn't an eco-city, but it was a city. And all cities are the same. Unless you're living in Manhattan, the island of billionaires, all cities are the same throughout time. And Jackson Heights was better than a lot of cities, but there were cities all around it which were hellholes. Murder increases, rape increases, sex offense increases, robbery, beating people up, slaughtering them, robbing. It all increases when you jam people in the cities. Eco-cities is not your salvation. Eco-cities is a prison. Okay? Don't be so stupid. I'm not talking about you, the listener of the Pullman Choir Report. I'm talking about your children and your friends. Tell them to wake up. And don't be fooled by these pretty propaganda pictures they send out. Okay, so the eco-cities Targets and restrictions will replace traditional living to keep land used for habitat from becoming a wasteland, protecting the surrounding wildlife. Okay, so that means in the eco-cities, there will be great emphasis on protecting wildlife, means cockroaches, rabbits, spiders. I live in California. I don't know where you live. I can't kill anything that's devouring a lawn or eating the leaves on a tree or that's digging into my house. There's nothing in California that's not a protected species. Every insect, every snake, every rattler, every, what do you call it? These wild, what are they? They look like dogs, and they're tougher and meaner, and they look like a different species. And they're wild, and they usually have rabies, and they're fearless, and they'll eat babies, and whatever. I've just had a mental blank. They're all over the place. You're not allowed to kill them because they're protected. So they're already starting to build these eco-cities. They have one eco-city. It's sustainable. You know what? I could care less if an eco-city is sustainable or not. I want to know how many sex offenders are living around not registered. I want to know how many drug dealers and murderers and criminals and gang members and rapists and psychopaths and people who are ready to crack and gun people down are living all around me. You can give me the sustainability report after you take care of serious business. Okay, so this planned eco-sustainable city is called Destiny. How romantic. And they're very proud the entire landscape will reduce on-site carbon emissions to zero. Now, you see, you talk to a lot of people, your kids to go to colleges and stuff, and they're being brainwashed. So in their brainwashed state, it sounds really, really good that that the entire landscape will reduce on-site carbon emissions to zero. That sounds good, doesn't it? It sounds good if half your brain doesn't work. If you're able to access at least one brain hemisphere, you have two, and you're able to use your critical thinking skills, the more important question to ask, rather than will my 500 feet eco-city apartment successfully reduce on-site carbon emissions to zero, is not only what kind of criminals and psychopaths are living around you, but what about the chemtrails? No mention of chemtrails. Chemtrails are over where I live, probably wherever you live. I see them every morning, every night. I know what's in those chemtrails. Those chemtrails have toxins. Those chemtrails that they deny exist. In my book, Conquering the Matrix, which you should get also, I have a speech that CIA Director Brennan made where he said, where he admitted for the first time publicly that they were doing ongoing weather modification and geoengineering. So that was the first time they admitted that they were using chemtrails to change the weather. But that hasn't caught up to everybody's cognitive ability yet. Now, in these chemtrails that they're spraying all over us, we're all breathing it, it's going into our fruits and vegetables. Like I said the other day, even if you grow organic, the water is flooded with chemtrails. The air is flooded with chemtrails, and chemtrails have all kinds of toxins and poisons and dangerous chemicals in them that are killing our immune systems and killing all kinds of things. Okay? That's a lot more important than this frivolous reduce on-site carbon emissions to zero. Because chemtrails, for example, you can see them, and don't allow your friends to lie and say, oh, those are normal jet emissions. They're only normal jet emissions if you never got off your posterior and looked at photographs which show you what normal jet emissions look like versus what chemtrail emissions look like. They're two different things. The chemtrails have, for example, aluminum in them. Aluminum is a super killer of the immune system. Aluminum is a major factor in triggering dementia and Alzheimer's disease. They also have in the chemtrails tranquilizing drugs. Okay? Tranquilizing drugs. A spectrum of tranquilizing drugs, aluminum, stuff that creates Morgellons disease, and serious toxins. So you can get Alzheimer's, you can get dementia, you get numbed out and dumb because you've got lithium, which is a tranquilizing drug in it. Okay? Why are they bombarding your breathing air and your water for your fruits and vegetables, et cetera, with toxic, mind-altering, mind-dumbing, Alzheimer's-producing, dementia-producing chemicals? That's what I want to know. But that's not even mentioned because they hide it. Why are they hiding it? Because people who lie, people who are into the business of deceiving people, lie about the truth. So one of the biggest games in the world that you all know, it's a word they used when I was a kid. It was called the old switcheroo. That's like a 1950s, 1960s term. So they have your eye on the false threat of on-site carbon emissions to zero, and they keep your eyes totally off the truth that they're dumping endless gallons brain killers, aluminum, Alzheimer's, dementia, and tranquilizing drugs coming out of the sky. And then your water supply, which is supposed to be pure. I mean, that's why these people run for what is the head of the Department of Water for all these local cities. They're all on the take. You ought to ring the doorbell of politely, peacefully, law-abidingly. You ought to ring the doorbell with your neighbors of every person in every city and town who's the head of the water district or the water department and ask him or her if they used purified water or are they drinking the water out of the tap. I would bet you 100% of them are not drinking the water out of the tap because they don't consider it fit for human consumption and their children. They're drinking purified water. They're not drinking water out of the tap because they know that the water out of the tap has cancer-producing chemicals, has all kinds of toxins, has fluoride, which is a known brain killer. It's not a conspiracy theory. Do your homework. Read my book, Conquering the Matrix. Adolf Hitler was the first person to put fluoride in the water supply in Germany. I think it was in the 1920s. Fluoride doesn't kill cavities. It kills brain cells. It's a tranquilizer. It dumbs down your perception. So there's all these weird chemicals in the water supply that you're drinking. Okay? Now, who cares if we reduce on-site carbon emissions to zero? Because I hate to break it to your politically correct friends, but regarding the climate change theory, there is no scientific proof whatsoever that man-made industrial pollution in the sense of carbon emissions is the cause of climate change. That is totally a false theory. Okay, so let's say it's true. Even though it's false, let's say it's true. America has its climate change and carbon emissions way, way down. China is belching out an unlimited pollution into the atmosphere. China is pumping more toxins and carbon emissions that's creating climate change than anybody, but nobody dealt with it. Why are they untouchable? You see the line? Oh, okay. So in your eco-friendly apartment, they're going to mandate LED lighting, solar panels. The city, these eco-cities will sustain a population of an estimated 250,000 with 10,000 residential units and 7 million square feet of commercial space. Well, you don't have to be a rocket scientist to figure out that that the eco-city is going to be jam-packed if it has an estimated population of 250,000 with only 10,000 residential units. That's not like spacious living. You see what they're doing? Do you remember when they're still selling them? They made it mandatory in California and other states to buy that squiggly light bulb because it used less electricity. And then they lied to the American people and they covered it up. When that squiggly light bulb happens to explode, or if you drop that squiggly light bulb on the floor, or that squiggly light bulb shatters, just like regular light bulbs shatter all the time, that eco-friendly squiggly light bulb, yeah, it gives you reduced power consumption, but it contains mercury gas. Mercury gas is one of the most dangerous, immune system killing, brain killing chemicals known to man. Mercury is one of the most deadliest poisons known to man. And so that squiggly light bulb is filled with mercury. And when it shatters and explodes, the vapor of pure toxic mercury goes into your little children's brain and bloodstream, or your brain and bloodstream. And only time will tell what horrible damage was done by one of the most toxic chemicals ever known to man, mercury. But that's been approved by the collective. The use of gray water. They're so creative with their language. The use of gray water to irrigate. To irrigate what? The use of gray water to irrigate. Irrigate. I guess supply water for growing of food and vegetables and grass and stuff. What's gray water? Well, look, you don't have to be a rocket scientist to figure out gray water is some form of polluted water. That is not a good thing. A biomass plant. This is disgusting. I can't even read it. Okay, so these little eco-friendly apartments. I see a picture of this girl living in an eco-friendly apartment. It's 500 feet. She's all smiling. You know why she's smiling? Because she drinks plenty of tap water and her brain is fried from fluoride. She breathes the chemtrails, so she's on the tranquilizer. And she's probably on meds. That's why she's smiling. Because nobody in their right mind, she has plenty of stuff. I'm looking at her picture. Nobody in their right mind would live in a 500 square foot apartment and be thrilled about it. But she's brainwashed. She's been told she's helping the planet. So she's got the same silly grin on her. And she's just happy as a kite because guess what? She has a 500 square foot apartment. And that's cool, isn't it? No, it's not cool, you idiot. Do you think that the elite, the globalist elite, live in 500 square foot apartments, drive. Oh, the other thing is, they're doing this already in LA. See, I'm doing this research for the new book, The Greatest Battle for the Hearts and Minds of Mankind in the History of the World, and I get a report from a friend that they're developing a whole series of brand new apartment buildings in LA, a massive number of apartment buildings, okay, that will be part of these eco cities. And guess what? These massive number of apartment buildings do not have any parking spaces or garage spaces for cars. Now, if you know anything about LA, you don't have room to park on the street. There's nowhere you can park because there's signs everywhere saying you can't park, and there's parking meters that'll charge you an arm and a leg if you park there. So by making no available parking places on the street and by deliberately designing the eco-friendly apartments to not have garages for their cars, they're forcing all the people that move into these eco-friendly apartments to drive, to only drive bicycles. Bicycles to the grocery store, bicycles to and from work, bicycles everywhere. And you go, oh, that's great, that's saving the planet. No, it's not saving the planet, you idiot. They're brainwashing you to accept the lifestyle of a communist Chinese peasant. I'm going to say it one more time for those of you that are having difficulty with this. When you look at pictures of that workers' communist paradise, communist China, you notice that almost nobody can afford an automobile. And they all live in 500-square-foot apartments. That's what communism delivers. So the communist Chinese drive bicycles everywhere. They can't afford cars. And they live in 500-square-foot apartments. Now, I hope the non-squiggly light bulb turns on in your brain. And you go, aha, that's what they're doing here. Except they're using brainwashing and telling you how you're saving the planet. They are giving you, on purpose, they are, through the Green New Deal, that some of your friends are stupid enough to actually think it's a deal, through the Green New Deal and these eco-cities and these regulations and brainwashing, they are making you very happy that you live in a 500-square-foot apartment and that you can't have an automobile because there's no place to park it and you'll have to ride your bicycle to and from work. Oh, happy day, the American dream is yours. That's not the American dream. That's Karl Marx's communist dream. You got brainwashed into thinking that the horrible standard of living that they have in communist nations, which is, means they're crammed into 500 square feet apartment, they can't afford cars, and they have to ride bicycles. Okay? You've now been brainwashed in this new America into thinking that the horrible standard of living that the people in communist China hate, 500 square foot apartments, bicycles, no cars, is going to be your destiny in America, in the eco cities and the eco apartments. You're going to get a 500 square foot apartment, a bicycle, just like the communist Chinese peasant, and no car. And that's where you're going in the future unless you wake up. Now, I have a lot more to share. Time is out for now. I need your help in spreading this message. Yeah, it's a tough message. I do use words that are deliberately disturbing to wake up the sleepy. It's not cruelty on my part. It's not cynicism on my part. It's love on my part because we're dealing with people who are asleep. We have to wake them up before it's too late. And most of all, they need Jesus Christ. And if you think for one moment you're going to have a home Bible study in an eco-friendly city, you better take a deep breath. Do you think that they're going to make it legal for you to have a Bible-believing Christian church or a Bible-believing Christian Bible study in an eco-friendly city with 500-square-foot apartments? Do you really think that they've even zoned, in the eco-friendly cities? That they've zoned places for evangelical born-again churches? No, they haven't zoned it. It's a Christless hellhole. We need to wake our brothers and sisters up. I need your help in doing that. I need your intercessory prayer warfare. I need you to pray for me, my family, and this ministry. I need you to send out the links of the program, and I need you to seek the Lord and contribute based on whatever the Lord tells you to do. So no matter how much God tells you to give, simply obey Him in your contributions and donations. Or if God tells you to give a small amount on a regular basis, obey Him. The point is, nobody can do this alone, but we can do this together. This is not about fighting for a selfish, lavish lifestyle. This is about preserving the American dream so that we can continue to worship the Lord and evangelize the lost. But we're going to have to
engage in spiritual warfare. So I thank you for your financial support. I thank you for your prayers. I thank you for spreading the message. Get yourself a copy of the brand new book at paulmcguire.us. Paradise Mountain Church meeting coming up in very soon. It's next week. Join me. Go to paulmcguire.us. God bless you. I'm Paul McGuire.